The proceedings of the meeting will be audio recorded, except for the committee is considering any exempt matters. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system, so please ensure that the microphone is switched on before speaking. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. I would also remind members of the committee of their obligation under the Councillor's Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interest they have in any items of business before the committee today. If you have any such interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the table for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. So, have we any apologies? We have Councillor Walker. We have Eddie Curtis and Adam Winsor. Any other apologies? No? All right, declarations of interest? No declarations of interest declared. The action sheet of the strategy. So we go through the action sheet on item 3. Page 1, page 2, page 3, and 4. That's the actions assigned. Have we a proposer and a seconder for the item 3? Propose, second. Councillor Savage?
Yeah, Chair, in relation to the alcohol bylaws, I'd raised at the last meeting that it was minuted that we would actually looking at an educational marketing programme to roll out along with the zero tolerance issue in relation to the alcohol bylaws, and just looking to see if that would be added to the actions. Chair, also, in relation to the issues, I would like to make a proposal in relation to the issue around the Albert Basin project in relation to the play park, the play area for the Albert Basin, and the proposals for a park. Ensure that, you know, we as a committee, I know there have been attempts by a number of members of this committee, including, I think, the vice chair of the committee, for that motion that was proposed by Councillor Brown at the last full council meeting to be heard at this committee. In fact, I'm aware that at the last ERT meeting that the request actually came from those proposing Uri 2020, etc., for it to be heard at this committee. And I'm proposing that we as a committee should discuss and debate, given the fact that now we appear to have wide cross-party support for the Albert Basin as an area for a proposed park.
Chair, just to say on the alcohol bylaws, yes, we are, the minutes of the last meeting have been ratified by Council now, so we will be taking action to address your point, albeit it may not be noted here, but just to give you assurances that we are taking action to address the point around the communication and marketing. The bylaws themselves won't, we will only be working on those once they take effect, then we'll roll out that campaign accordingly.
Your other item, Councillor, it's not on the agenda. It's going to a meeting on Tuesday and we'll come back here. So I'm moving on to...
Sir, I've made a proposal, Chair.
I'm moving on. I'm not accepting it. I'm not taking it.
Well, can I make a counter-proposal or another proposal?
It's not on the agenda, right? Item 4, gifts and hospitality. Item 4, you're picking that. Doreen is taking that.
Thank you, Chair. Members, you're asked tonight...
Chair, can I come in here, please? Understanding now that a proposal must be dealt with. We can't move off the item without doing a proposal. And we can put forward a counter-proposal.
And then you want to stand on the agenda.
Chair...
We're fair to standing orders, Chair. Can we get clarification from Aileen?
get clarification.
Yes, well, I am looking at standing order 4.3 here, and it says, except in the case of business required by statute, or were in the opinion of the chairperson of the meeting, the business should be considered by the meeting as a matter of urgency. No business shall be transacted at a meeting of the council, a committee or subcommittee, other than that specified in the summons relating thereto.
So, it's not urgent, it's been done for the meeting on Tuesday, so item 4.
Thank you, Chair. Members, you're being asked tonight to approve a new policy relating to gifts and hospitality. The policy is contained within your pack. The purpose of the policy is to outline for all council staff and elected members some fundamental guidelines and principles around the provision of the acceptance of gifts and hospitality and the provision thereof. It acts as a mechanism to provide advice on how hospitality should be both approved and recorded, and outline some roles and responsibilities for staff within the council. One of the key issues in putting together this policy is ultimately that we want to operate in an organisation with good governance and transparency and accountability. But at its core, it also offers some level of protection to both councillors and staff. The policy is not saying that we should not accept gifts and hospitality in all cases. It's really just setting some guiding principles. All of these are really based on the principles of public life and on the code of conduct, and very much goes to the heart of looking at the assessment of how the receipt, the acceptance of a gift might be perceived by others. You will see within the policy there are certain, there's an actual template which everyone will be asked to complete on receipt of gifts and hospitality, and these will be maintained in a register. It's something, the policy is something which the Northern Ireland Audit Office have recommended we bring in, and we're asking for your approval tonight. Happy to take any questions.
Any queries on item 4? Professor Lawrence, if you...
I do have a comment, Chair, and I hope on the last item that the President isn't set that if any proposals are made on items that are in this meeting that they're taken, I'd probably make the same argument that was made to me at the Council meeting, that there was training on standing orders and procedure, and I know that you weren't at attendance the last meeting I was at, so I think it's something that we should look at. I find the transparency, and even we're talking here about hospitality, I find it crazy that we can't even if the proposal is rejected, and I agree with that, but a counter-proposal can't be tabled, and the Chair just shuts it down and moves on because the item isn't, he doesn't want it discussed. I find that extremely unfortunate. But in this item, we have the gifts and hospitality policy. I just want to know if records of offers declined, what happens to them records? If there's an offer towards an individual and they decline it, and maybe it's happened in the past, that they have to record it. I'd like to know what happens when recording that, because it would have a knock-on effect if that's something to go back to the people that had made offers or whatever, or is any clarity around that. Also, it states in the policy annual conferences. So if members are going to annual conferences, it's something that has to be filled in, say a different party conference or whatever, where there's a meal at the end of the evening. Is that something that has to be on record? And is it something in the past, as I'm only into council 18 months, is it something in the past that people have been doing and recording their attendance at annual conference?
Okay.
Thanks.
In the case of declining any gifts or hospitality, there is contained within the policy a suggested, I suppose, method of decline. It's not going to be suitable in all circumstances, and the overriding message in the policy is that really each circumstance you need to apply your judgment to it, and certainly we can provide advice in any circumstance on that. We are suggesting that any offers declined are recorded, as you state, Councillor. All of the gifts and hospitality registers will be maintained. I know there are certain organisations who will publish all of their gifts, both received and declined, in the openness, in the interest of openness and transparency. We haven't yet, it's not within the policy as to whether or not we'll do that, and that's something that we will discuss with you at a later date. But all of that information will be retained on the register. As to the annual conferences, again, this is all based on good practice, and we're saying that it should be recorded, and I suppose that's really, we're not saying it shouldn't be accepted in any way, saying they're perfectly acceptable, but it's really in the interest of recording. I know in the cases of yourselves, the counsellors, for example, that is recorded in many ways with regard to where there is a cost associated with those already and makes its way into the public domain. So I suppose it's really no more onerous, but we will assist, especially where we fix those conferences, in the recording of them. With regard to what has happened previously, the two legacy councils operated somewhat different procedures, and really the purpose of this policy is to ensure that we're all operating a consistent procedure across council. Is very much based on best practice. We've noted in that the best practice guide that we have looked at in bringing it together.
And so we're just...
Chair, we're asked tonight to agree to a policy, and then we're told we're going to go for training. Would it not be better to get the training and see what the policy is all about before... Like, when you're asked to agree to something, we don't really know what we're actually agreeing to. I think we should have the training first and then have the policy.
Well, we would need to have an agreed policy, and then we'd roll out the training on that policy thereafter.
So can we change the policy and we're not happy after the
training? We'll always review. A policy will always be subject to review. So if anything that would come out of the training that didn't fit well, we can always review the policy. But it would just be normal procedure to bring a policy through, and then we'll roll out the training thereafter to both staff and councillors. That would be our normal procedure.
Happy enough with that, Council Order.
Just one chair for me, or one question for me, Chair. The value of a gift, has it always been £25 for staff and elected members, or has that been adjusted? And then also, there's advice under the next one, so external hospitality, where it doesn't exceed £20 per head, should that not be £25 as well? Should not be consistent across the policy that it's the same monthly value? Because to me, external hospitality is the same as a gift that you'd be declaring in the register anyhow.
With regard to the £25, that was something that was defined at that value in the legacy Newry policy. I believe that the legacy dying policy didn't define a value as such.
I think it was higher than 25 in the dying.
We looked across quite a number of policies, a number of respective council policies, and certainly and looked to the guides produced by the civil service as well. 25 seemed to be an average, which is why we've gone with that figure. And as I say, it was certainly what the legacy Newry were operating to. With regard to where we are granting hospitality, again, we were trying to, I suppose, be economical with the ratepayer's purse in that respect, and again, looked at what we believe to be an average, really, looking at a number of policies. So that's how we arrived at the £20 per head. As with all these things, we will monitor how this works in practice. If it isn't working, then we will review the policy and bring that back to you.
Okay, thank you.
Do you want to propose? No.
Yes.
Can we have a proposal for that? Second item 4. Item 5 in risk management policy. You're taking that too, then?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Members, you're asked tonight to approve a revised risk management policy, really. You will recall that Council adopted a risk management strategy in March 2016. Those of you that sit on the Audit Committee will be aware that our internal auditors carried out a review of our risk management procedures in April 17. They provided satisfactory assurance. However, they did make a number of comments and a number of recommendations as to how we could improve things further. One of those recommendations centred around reviewing and updating the risk management policy. So what you have in front of you tonight is that reviewed and updated version. The new policy is based on all the key risk management principles as in your previous policy. Really, the update has been to incorporate a number of internal audit points around definitions and to make the policy more user-friendly and easy to understand. So there's no significant change in the policy. It's really a review and update and also reflects where we are currently as an organisation with regard to the use of assurance statements, etc., to embed our risk management procedures. So asking you tonight to approve the policy and happy to take any questions or comments.
Andy, Vice Chair.
I must say, now, risk assessment is dealing with sort of financial, economic things, and being my sort of strong point. But that said, working in the outdoor industry, you know, we do a lot of risk assessments, and you know, that's sort of something we go to quite a bit. Just wondering, is this risk assessment policy going to be the go-to risk assessment document, given also that we're looking to promote ourselves as the outdoor capital of Ireland? So obviously, then there's obviously going to be events going to be run, etc. I mean, I'm just wondering, does a different framework need to be looked at that for sort of outdoor pursuits, outdoor recreation, to sort of financing, and also just looking at that, you know, there's no some things that we would deal with. There's also the benefits of risk, you know, and obviously, you know, there's a comment about not being risk averse, and that's understandable. But and mainly, just gonna, is it going to be the go-to document? Because it would hate it for someone to be to curtail us being the risk, the outdoor capital of Ireland, which is a wonderful aspiration.
This is your overarching risk management document, so it's really looking at the risk management and are focusing on the objectives of us as an organisation. What there will be beneath this is a number of other policies, for example, health and safety policies that will deal with risk assessments in relation to events, for example. But this is about setting the overall risk management procedures of the council. So really we're focusing on that very fundamental corporate governance and risk management. So in relation to the outdoor capital, for example, if we have a corporate objective to achieve you know, increased tourism figures, we will be looking at what risks, what opportunities, what threats there are in that regard. But when you get into the more granular level of organising events, etc., and the health and safety risk assessment and event management, etc., they would be there would be more detailed policies that would apply to those.
I just hear a risk assessment to get in the way of something like that, box on, but I think a risk assessment would cover.
Councillor Garvin.
Thank you, Chair. And just a suggestion, obviously. Hopefully everyone's like me, that they try and compare what was the previous policy to what the new policy is. But it would be useful, obviously, to have a tracking mechanism, as Word document does provide, to see, actually see where changes are happening within the policy. You know, if you weren't to compare the previous one to the new one, it would be very difficult to actually fully read that document and understand what has been added additionally. So I'm just thinking for future changes, it may be useful to have that tracking mechanism so we can easily identify what has changed in the policy.
Sure, yeah, I can do that for you.
Councillor Carr.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. And again, Doreen already explained there that maybe there are lower level policies that need to come out, but I have been confronted by members of a community organisation who in the past, when organising something, getting help from the council or using council facilities, they needed to put in place insurance of up to £3 million. That has increased, I'm being told, to £5 million, and now this year from £5 million to £10 million. Now, this is putting a big burden onto a number of these organisations. And I'm wondering, are we going too far with this? Like, how many claims have been made for cake stalls or big car boot sales or something that exceeds £3 million or £5 million and none of them will come near £10 million? Is it reasonable to be asking these groups to pay for that sort of money? Or is it as a result of some of the more, maybe not call them danger sports, but activities that are going on the mountain where there is real risks, and maybe that sort of money could be included, but not for somebody going to do organise a car boot sale or a cake sale or something like that. So.
I would like to agree with you, Councillor Garnett, because I have come across this, and we went from the community centre in Cross Midland, which was the busiest community centre in the council area, like the real hub of the town, like, and every organisation, every group, that everything took place there now, and they find that the doors are closed to them there. So I would like to agree with your comments. Councillor Vaughan.
Thanks, Chair. And it's in fact Councillor Sharpin's comment as well. I went through the document and trying to compare it to, you know, find out what was added or what was taken out. And as Councillor Sharpin said, it would be easier to see side by side what was added. But Doreena, was it just that it was over-engineered that stuff was taken out? And then on Councillor Kerr's comment, was the over-engineering anything got to do with the $10 million insurance public liability that's needed for, say, a fairground raid at the Pride Festival? Or if you've won fairground raid, it goes from $5 million to $10 million, which, you know, puts up by £200 for the insurance. If it was over-engineered and that has been changed, has any of them things been identified and will that be reduced in time going forward? Because I completely take the point that Councillor Kerr said. You know, if you stuck, and I think it was Dodgins that was put in at the Pride event on the Saturday, it went from $5 million public liability to $10 million because it was a fairground ride or bouncy castle or something like that there. So what was the over-engineering? I know it has been reassessed and reviewed because it was over-engineered, but we don't know what the over-engineering was and what was removed. So a bit of clarity on that.
The two things are somewhat separate. The over-engineering referred to by the internal auditor was with regard to the policy document itself. The document that had been approved in March 16 was very lengthy and had lots of narrative, and they felt that it wasn't very user-friendly, and there was a lot of information in there that had the potential to distract from really focusing on risk and focusing on what the key officers in this organisation need to do with regard to our risk management. The big thing that was added, and I say big thing is one paragraph really, is a paragraph 31. Risk management and I suppose the best practice in risk management has moved on somewhat in the last couple of years, and an internal audit had recommended to us that we needed to define our risk appetite a bit better. There had been reference made to our risk appetite in the last document, but we hadn't actually defined it. So a paragraph 31, that's where you'll find a definition of risk appetite. With regard to the comments around insurance, I know I actually, our own, we are insured as a council, and we take guidance from our own insurers as to the level of insurance that they require us and recommend that we get from a community group. We have obtained a lot of feedback similar to that which the councillors make tonight, and we brought in our insurance broker around 3 months ago, and actually I sat in that meeting as well, and Janine Hillen, with regard to the assistant director in dealing with the community group, sat in that and put forward a number of the concerns that she had received through the DEAs, etc., and tried to work through those with the insurer. And that culminated in a paper which went to the Active and Healthy Committee, I'm looking at Michael, about 3 months ago. And I know in certain of those circumstances where there was a latitude and where we felt as if it was required to operate the business, you know, the insurer would basically say that we can go against the advice of the insurance, but then we are uninsured as a council. So we sat down, we had about 2 hours with the insurance broker to try and see. The difficult thing is there are certain circumstances which the insurance broker deems to be high risk, and Councillor Byrne, you've mentioned a couple of them, which maybe, you know, the man on the street would not say is high risk, but the insurance broker does. So I suppose from our perspective as officers of the council, we do need to afford a level of insurance protection to this council. And I know Janine sat in and tried to work very hard to bring a paper to Active and Healthy, which got the balance as best we could without putting the overall council at risk.
I'm not sure, Chair, can I come back?
I accept
what you're saying, but we're going to the insurance people and asking them, how much insurance do you think we should get here? To me, that fundamentally doesn't sound that right. They're going to go as high as possible, surely it's within their interest to do so. I'm talking about realistically over the history of this council or the history of the two legacy councils, what's the biggest claim that was ever made for somebody organising a car boot sale or a Christmas market or so on? I think we've got to be realistic that yes, you've got to have public liability for somebody tripping and falling. They may do themselves damage. You may face a claim of £5,000 or £10,000 or whatever, but very, very rare circumstances is going to come anywhere near £10 million. That's just a feeling. And I think that, I know it's gone to AHC and so on now, but I think collectively we need to take a look at this. We are burdening the groups out there and putting people off trying to get involved in community development and helping the community.
I can look into that for you. The other thing, though, to note is with regard to claims, there is a time frame, and there's a very lengthy time frame in which to bring a claim. So in the case of a child, for example, they've got until they're 18 to bring a claim against this council. So we may have incidents which have happened in the past which no claim has yet been lodged for. But I can look into the history of the claims for you and bring back some analysis on that.
Councillor Bourne, I'll let Councillor Carroll in a second time, so we can be brief.
Yeah, I'll be brief, Chair. Thanks. Just on that point about the meeting that you had with the insurance company, Dorina, because I go back to the Pride Festival, they had paid £5 million public liability every year, or got it out, it was 200 odd quid. It went up by 200 to get to £10 million. Nobody could identify or put their finger on where that decision was made. And now you're saying, right, the paper was taken to AHC, and the officer that I spoke to in the legal end of it, from renting out McClellan Park there as well, spoke to Janine. And can that decision be reversed? If you're looking at the high risk, can we sit there and have a document come back and say, listen, the dodging isn't high risk or whatever? I understand that there could be, you know, a scenario where somebody could lose a life like that. But for a decision to go through like that and then a user group just to be told that it's now £10 million, but we don't know where that decision came from. And it went on for about 10 days. We still didn't get an answer where it came from. I'd like to see if that was reviewed, because coming back the next year, I think £10 million is too high for putting I think it was one of them fucking Broncos and a Dodgem in the Pride Festival. We're never going to get anybody claiming £10 million, you know. And if we look back at the past, like, you know, any claims that were made, I think we should be sensible, but not take the lead from the insurance company, but try and make a wee bit of sense of it ourselves.
Okay, I look into that specific for you, councillor, to see if we can get to the bottom of why that moved between £5 million and £10 million in respect of the Pride event.
We want to move ahead with approving this.
Yes, please.
Right, can we have a proposal and a second up for item 5? Right, item 6, safeguarding policy. Katrina, you're taking off.
Chairman, thank you. First of all, members will have seen, having gone through the policy, a reference to a safeguarding coordinator, and I wanted this evening to introduce Colleen Morrison to my right, who has been recruited to the council to look after safeguarding, to be a lead officer and responsible for safeguarding, and this post is shared with Newry Morne and Down District Council and Armagh, Banbridge and Craigavon councils. So we piloted this to give priority to safeguarding, and so far I have to say it's been very, very effective. In terms of the policy then, members, you have before you the policy which is recommended for adoption. You'll see in the covering report I've drawn attention to Appendix 6 of the policy, which sets out the proposed models for our designated officers and for our steering groups. That composition has been reworked through extensive consultation and is how we see it working at present. However, as the policy evolves, we will of course keep that under review and modify it as best we can and as best delivers the aims of the policy. I would also draw members' attention to 2.2 of the report, where you'll see there's a number of associated procedures which have been and are in the process of being updated as well, which will underpin and support the effective operation and delivery of this policy. Other than that, Chairman, I'm happy to recommend the policy for adoption and also to answer any questions any members may have.
Thank you. Thank you, Katrina, Colleen, you're very welcome. I have Councillor Vaughan.
Thanks, Chair. This is a new policy that's devised and not replacing any old policy that was written there. I suppose it's very, very tricky, and it's a subject that obviously needs protected. But based on ourselves, like, you know, if we, you know, witness a hate crime or, you know, go on cameras in the road and we pick up different things, is we first come to the council to report that, or, for example, with a hate crime, and then report to the PSNI, or is it going through where we fill in the form, go to Colleen, or I think the elected reps through the flowchart is go to Katrina, and then to Colleen if Katrina's not available. Fill in the form, and is that our side of it done, and then the safeguarding coordinator will take it on and follow it through with the statutory bodies or whatever. The other thing that states in it, there was a line in it that said no promises should be made to maintain confidentiality. And I find that extremely difficult. You know, there could be a number of scenarios that cameras in the door, you could pick up something. And whether it's through conversation, I know you're not to ask leading questions or anything, but just make it aware to the safeguarding coordinators that you feel as if there's an issue there that needs to be looked into. But I think, is it the confidentiality that if you were talking to somebody, and they were feeding information to you and you fed it to the safeguarding coordinator, that the confidentiality is with their name, or is it that the councillor's name will be listed on it, you know, to go back and say, listen, if I raised an issue irrelevant that the people didn't realise, I picked up something and raised an issue with Colleen or Katrina, then that family would be notified that Councillor Pete Byrne had filled in a form. You know, it's extremely important policy, but it's extremely tricky, and you know, you're stepping on people's private lives as well. So, and I know there's an obligation on the policy for us to report anything that we feel. It's an absolute obligation to report it. I'd just like a bit of clarity on the maintenance of confidentiality, and is that both ways, and also if it's going to be followed up with the PSNI, or we just report it.
Chairman, thank you. First of all, I'll deal with the first point in relation to elected members and the reference to reporting an escalating incident, so it's referred to in Appendix 6. The Councillor gave an example of, for example, when members are canvassing. Those sorts of activities would be as political representatives of respective parties, and you'll see in the flowchart there's a distinction between when elected members are acting party business or when they're acting on behalf of the council and discharging council business. When they're operating on behalf of the council, anything that comes to light will be dealt with under the council policy. When acting on behalf of the party or an elected representative outside of their role to this council, that will be governed by your own respective party operating procedures or policies that you have in relation to safeguarding, reporting any concerns and how those concerns are escalated. The second point then in relation to confidentiality, Councillor Byrne's absolutely right, this is such a sensitive area, and confidentiality is paramount in terms of how we process and deal with information. So that needs to, the confidentiality there absolutely needs to be respected. The reason for not being able to guarantee absolute confidentiality is because once a matter is escalated to the relevant authorities, whether it's through social services, whether it's through PSNI, whether it's through other bodies, at that point, what needs to be done to address what needs to be done will very often necessitate disclosure of information to those relevant bodies and those relevant authorities. To that extent, confidentiality is respected within each of those organisations because that is imperative. But when someone makes a disclosure, you just don't know where it could end up, and we cannot guarantee that confidentiality because that could be taken out of our hands and in actual fact could become a necessity if in the event, for example, there was to be a prosecution or, you know, children taken into care, that sort of thing. We just simply can't give that guarantee. Chairman, I hope that answers the question.
Councillor Sharvin.
Thank you, Chair. A couple of questions. The first one is that three members of staff will receive the training. Is that across site? So then when the trainer is sharing that training out, it will be equally delivered at the same time. Next one is, how often will refreshers be provided, especially for line management? Because it would be then that probably be facing it as much than any others. What governance will be in place to ensure new employees are trained? I do take note that under point 16, it will be accompanied by tailored operating procedures. I was just seeking that assurance that we're not doing this just to tick the box, that new people come in will also be getting trained.
Okay, thank you, Councillor. So in relation to the trainer, it will be me who'll be identified as one of them train the trainers, as well as two sports development officers. One will be located in Urium, and it's proposed that one will be located in Down, and they were picked due to the nature of their post, the amount of contact that they would have with the likes of children and adults at risk, and the presence that they would also have within the community and support that they would provide to the likes of our community and sports clubs. Therefore, it should cover a broad area. Obviously, the training would have to be coordinated to assure that staff are trained in this, and the launch as well would be essential in making sure that all of this information is disseminated and people know what to do when these scenarios arise. In terms of the operating procedures as well, we've also looked at an induction process, and something that we do around safeguarding to ensure that officers are safeguarded, and that when people come in, they know that this policy exists and their duties and responsibilities in relation to it. And that, I suppose, is a way of making sure that that information is disseminated until the point where they can avail of the training. But the training would need to be fairly regular based on the likes of, for example, very heavy periods of time pre-summer, where we would have a lot of staff coming in and where the capacity for safeguarding issues to arise is quite high, that training would be essential and coordinated to reflect that.
Just on from a councillor's perspective, maybe on child protection, where we're interacting with children probably on a fairly frequent basis, should we have child protection training?
Chairman, yes. You'll see within the report, subject to agreement of the new policy, the intention is that everyone will receive training, and that will include elected members. And we see elected members being key to the operation of this policy, because you guys are eyes and ears on the ground so much as well. And equally, it's very important that you're clear on what you need to know, and that goes with child protection as well as adults at risk.
Thank you. Mr. Murray.
Yeah, just in response to Councillor Holly, Councillor Devlin, Councillor Mornin's thing, just working in a school and being a teacher, obviously you get up to date child protection training. Also, being a coach within a GAA club, there's regular child protection training. And I would say that if anyone's working with children and you find yourself asking that question, you're better to get child protection training ASAP. And I suppose once you have it once, you'll understand the necessity of it, and you'll want to top up your training as often as possible. Good question.
We have
a
you on
it.
Thank you, Chair.
Sure.
Welcome, Mrs. Morrison, and congratulations on being Mrs. Morrison. I think you were Miss Lavery last time. So, congratulations. Just three really quick questions. First of all, will external, if the council event is supporting something, will the whoever's organising an event, will they have to forward on safeguarding, their safeguarding policies, or will they automatically fall into this in order to secure funding or any sort of event help that we're giving them? And in regards to the numbers, it's all the useful numbers at the back. I mean, just from my own experience, those numbers live as such, because there's nothing worse than going in the heat of the moment to find that they're not live, and then it's a palaver, as I'm sure you can imagine. And also, just these are all in-house forms. Is there any necessity to have the Unicini form attached onto this as well, or is that something that is superfluous to what we need as a council? Thank you.
You take it.
Okay, I'll take it. This question, first of all, in relation to externals, within the operating procedures, that's one of the areas that we're given attention to with the likes of, say, the out centres, art centre, etc., where we would have groups, bodies, organisations coming in using our facilities, that we would expect that they will be operating under their own procedures, but if they don't have the procedures, they need to sign up to our procedures. When it would come to the likes of funding, we would expect that organisations who are looking for funding with, where it is involved with groups who would come under this policy, we would expect that they would be giving us that assurance as a council already, that they've got robust systems in place before we would be releasing funding. In relation to the telephone numbers, can I give an assurance to members that we have been through each of those telephone numbers several times and been in touch with the trusts to verify them, because they have changed through the development of this policy. You're absolutely right, Councillor. There's no point in having the numbers if you don't have an assurance that when you go to use them that you're going to get somebody off the other end of the phone and they know what you're talking about and they deal with the area that you're operating with. Unichini is very, very specific, and I maybe ask Colleen just to talk a wee bit about that then in relation to how that would interface with our procedures.
Yeah, okay, thank you, Chair. So in relation to the Unichini and even looking at the Trust Adult Safeguarding Referral Form, it's extremely detailed and a lot of it goes into information that we just wouldn't have access to. Coming previously from Education Authority and, you know, running a youth centre, we were still limited in what we were able to complete in relation to that, because it could be an assessment in relation to the home, in relation to GP documents, in relation to, you know, other providers who would have access to that child. So we wouldn't be going searching for that. Therefore, I thought that in terms of the process, we want to keep the form as undaunting for officers and people who are going to be using it, but that it still grasps the key information for us to be able to process the referral. So I hope that answers.
Fair enough. Can I have a proposal for the policy? A second. All right. Right, item 7. Ken, you have all this good news for us. Treasury management. So please cheer us up.
Thank you. It's the Prudential Code. Maybe the Chief Executive wishes to give this report. Chair, the members are asked to review and hopefully approve the two attached documents, which is the Treasury Management Outrun for 2016-17, and the second one is the Prudential Indicators Outrun Report for 2016-17. The Treasury Management Outrun Report requires the Council to approve a Treasury Management Annual Report after the end of the financial year when the accounts have been audited. The authority has borrowed substantial sums of money and is therefore exposed to financial risks, which includes the loss of invested funds and the revenue effect of changing interest rates. The successful identification, monitoring and control of risk is therefore central to this, the Council's Treasury Management Strategy. On page 1, it sets out the risks that are external, and I don't intend to go through that list. The local context, the underlying need to borrow for capital purposes is measured by what is called, and I'm trying to keep the financial jargon to a minimum, but it's called the capital financing requirement. And if you go out and build a leisure centre for $15 million, basically what you have to do is to go out and get a loan for $15 million to pay the contract. The capital financing requirement, which we started the year, was 61.1. We ended the year at 70.1, and that had increased by $9 million. The net borrowing, because if you have money in the bank, you don't go out and take out loans. So we take off our usable reserves, take off our working capital, and the net borrowing started the year at just short of 50 million and rose to 62.4 million. The authority's current strategy is to maintain borrowing and investment below their underlying levels, and that sometimes is known as internal borrowing, using your investments and not going out and borrowing to the limit, to your limit. With interest rates being higher than what the investment income would be, it is prudent to keep your investments as low as possible, and indeed your borrowing. Table 2 shows the Treasury Management summary, where we started the year with loans of 58.1 million and we ended the year at 59.5 million. The net effect of paying off our principal and taking out new loans was a movement of 1.4 million increase. We take off our cash and cash equivalents. All our investments are in short-term deposit accounts. They started the year at 12.9 million, and we, as I said previous, we were using those to pay off our, to finance our capital expenditure, and as a result, ended the year at 7.8 million. The borrowing activity, as I said, the authority held £59.5 million of loans, which was an increase of £1.3 million on the previous year. Our investment activity, as I said, all our investments are in short-term deposit accounts. As I said, we started the year 12.9. We used 5.1 and ended the year at 7.8. As part of this report, we have to state that we fully complied with the SIPFA Code of Practice, and we are stating that we have complied with the requirements. The second report is the Prudential Indicator Report. There are certain prudential indicators such as capital expenditure. We had, as part of the estimate process of 16-17, way back in February 16, stated we were going to spend 27.6 million in the year. There was actually only 14.6 million spent, and most of that was due to the leisure centres not spending as much in the first year as we had anticipated. The capital financing requirement measures the authority's underlying need to borrow for capital purposes, and as part of our strategy for 16-17, we said we our limit would be 84.3. Our actual capital financing requirement is much less at 70.1. The next prudential code of note is the operational boundary for external debt. The operational boundary is based on the authority's estimate of most likely scenario for external debt. It links directly to the authority's estimates of capital expenditure, the capital financing requirement, and our cash flow requirements. And as you can see, our borrowing was boundary was 79.2, but our actual debt is much less at 59.5. We also have a
Prudential Code called the authorized limit for external debt, and the authorized limit provides headroom over and above the operational boundary for exceptional circumstances, and this was not required during this year. Another prudential code that we use is the ratio of financing costs, i.e. the MRP, minimum revenue provision, and interest rates divided by the total budget for the revenue budget for the year. Our estimate was set at 15.27. The actual ratio was 13.04. I'm happy to take any questions.
Councillor Sharman. Thank you, Chair. Not sure Ken delivered the good news you asked for there.
No.
just one thing, Ken, that you mentioned is about interest rates. And obviously, as you mentioned, we've over 59 million of borrowing. And I'm assuming that is split across a number of borrowing loans that all have different interest rates. And we did meet with the Treasury officials, and we did seek advice, and we have made amendments on how we're managing our money for the longer term. Have we considered about refinancing and capitalising on lower interest rates as they are now, as given that interest rates are actually creeping up, and it may actually impact on us in the future for future loans? So have we considered the options of business now and what we could do to balance the books a wee bit better?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, as you say, our loan profile of the 59 million is made up of maybe 300 individual loans. Those are a set of fixed rates, and following the inception of the Prudential Code, we now no longer take out loans specific to a project, and we take it out when required. And we use Arlene Close to advise us whether we take out annuity loans, maturity loans, what is the best way to, if we need to borrow at all, is it better to user investments, and so therefore going forward with the loans that we taken out last year was 5 million. We took out independent advice from Arlene Close, who advised us.
Could I have a proposal and a second for Ken's report? Propose, and a second. Alright, item 8, and you're on, Connor. It's the provision of existing emergency preparedness groups. What's for sure taking that one?
Yes, thanks, Chair. The report I've submitted to the committee tonight is to provide members with details of the proposals for the transition of emergency preparedness groups from 5 to 3. Members were asked to note the attached proposals appended to the report and the implications that it has for the council. So I'm happy to take any questions.
Your report only for an open. Alright. Councillor
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Yeah, I suppose the question from going through the report, what is the basis behind moving from 5 to 3? I think in the area of the emergency preparedness for this council sits on, is not with ABC Council. ABC and us is one of the 5 districts. So if the southern area is going to be a lot bigger, and I know, you know, the basis of it for organisations to work together to plan or respond to an emergency, but and I note in your paper here it does say that there can't be any dilution, and it actually states that there can't be any reduction in preparedness or response capability. But in the bigger area, I just want to know why you move from 5 to 3. What's the reason behind it? Because it's not outlined in the bill.
Yeah, Chairman, again, this is an issue that's been discussed with the permanent secretaries and the Blue Light responders. Again, PSNI have reconfigured their emergency response within the police, and the police have the body, the Blue Light agency, which has primary responsibility for emergency planning. They have reconfigured within a 3 sectoral areas, And again, so in essence, because you rely very closely on the Blue Light responders in terms of any emergency, what we are as a facilitator, we are not the lead agency. So what we do is respond. So therefore, on the basis that they have moved to three, we have really no other option but move to three. The other issue is that we get, in terms of the funding, coordination funding, and funding we get from central government through the executive office, again, very much depends. So we get there's coordinators which are paid for across the area, and again that comes directly from central government. So I suppose here pays the piper calls the tune, and from that perspective, and with the PSNI, you know, while it's been brought to you, we don't really have much choice in the matter. That's exactly it. And again, probably, Chairman, we've got a budget within the SOLAS at a meeting on Friday, and again, we've appointed now a regional lead funded by central government who will act as a regional coordinator, Joe McCaffrey. So when you had the issue that you had the flooding in Derry, she takes the lead, and then she pulls in regional support officers, which are across there. So if we had flooding in Uri, I would have one contact officer who would be my regional coordinator. I would have Ian Sands here, who would be my direct line on the ground. So in terms of escalating it up to the Gold Command, we involve the permanent secretary, like the flooding you had in Derry and Strabane, then that's the reason coordinator ties into that.
I presume this covers coastal flooding as well, does it? Yeah. Our area is subject to east down, subject to coastal flooding about every 2 to 3 years, and the tide falls around from Dundrum up to Killyleagh, you know, hitting each village about an hour or 2 hours after each other. In most of the villages, the road service used to lead, and we used to follow. But in one or two villages, the road service didn't recognise the existence of the village, for instance, Coney Island, and therefore no services were delivered. In those cases, council did agree to lead in the old councils. So I'm just wondering, have you taken that on board in the new emergency plan?
Within the group, there is a severe weather working group established as a subgroup of the emergency preparedness groups, and they will take the lead on the coordination and establishment of severe weather emergency response plans. So we will sit on that group, as will other responders, the likes of Transport NI, Rivers Agency, and NI Water. So that will be taken forward by a subgroup of the emergency preparedness group.
Thank you, Connor, for that. So that item is only for an open.
Chair. It was just a brief one. I've seen the effectiveness of our own local emergency plan kick in when there was local flooding as opposed to maybe a wider major disaster. I'm just wondering, do we have, as Mary Morning Down, our own emergency plan sitting in underneath that would kick in first before we upgrade it to a wider area, or is the lines of communication now straight into this group?
Thanks, sir. We would have our own internal emergency plans that would feed in to the groups that would be escalated as part of the emergency planning as it's enacted and it's activated.
Thanks for that, Connor. Right, item 9, and Ali, you're taking that. It's acquisition of land at Sugar Island, Uri.
Thank you, Chairman. Council previously agreed to express an interest in land at Sugar Island in Uri. Council currently cultivates and maintains a small park area, garden area. It's essentially a small urban park. Clarity was sought around advertising hoardings which exist at this location. Land and Property Services have provided a open market vacant possession valuation to site at £5,000, which has been recommended for acceptance by Council as a fair representation of the value of the property. They have also advised that the advertising hoarding will come with the site, and the Council would then be free to set up its own arrangements with third parties in terms of generating an income from that. So this is really for a decision from members as to whether or not they wish to proceed with the acquisition in the sum of £7,000, and also authority to negotiate in terms of the advertising hoarding. Thank you.
And is your recommendation to is a recommendation to go for this, just to, or is it just up to you leaving to ourselves?
Right. Chairman, this is really for members. We'd agreed to express an interest, which we've done. The valuation, if you wish to proceed, is recommended for acceptance by the council's valuer.
Thank you. I think Councillor Barnett's back to you.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, I'll propose that we can proceed with the acquisition. I think £7,000 is a fair price for the land there. That you know, it's good to have park space in the centre of Newry, and £7,000 for that part that's planted out and has an advertising board on it is quite reasonable. I'm surprised that we don't have any idea of a value for advertising income. I know it says at the minute on the paper that we don't have, it's not known a stage, at this stage, that the rental income of advertising hoarding, but surely we have some sort of idea. Just want to get clarity on this.
Come in. Councillor Carroll, did you indicate to come in on this item?
Sorry, Chair, it was similar. I think it sounds like good value, yeah. And your 7,000, you would think, would be recovered very, you know, within a couple of years. I'd second the proposal.
You second that, so we have a proposal and a second for that. Right. Thanks for that. You're also taking item 10, the sublease of the Boat House of Round Point.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, Council had agreed to enter into a new 5-year lease for the Boat House Round Point. A previous expression of interest exercise had identified Carlingford Lough Curragh Club as willing to take over the management of that facility on behalf of Council and promote water sports in that area. The club have now approached council and asked whether the sublease could be at a peppercorn rental. The rental is £4,000 per annum. I've set out a bit of the history of the matter, and historically the council has met that cost where it has been let out to third parties. So it's just to get really a steer in terms of whether the council is happy to proceed on the basis of a peppercorn rental. Thank you.
Nice. Your proposed, Councillor Ryan, are you seconder for that? Yeah. Councillor Savage. All right, item 11 then, the leasing of the foreshore. It's only for Newton, for an open. 11 and 12, you're taking them?
Yes, Chairman. You'll be aware that fairly recently we've got agreement to proceed renewing the foreshore lease and also the lease for Carlingford Lough Greenway. Just for members' information, the terms of the renewal for the head lease will be a 20-year lease from the 10th of June 2017 at an annual rental of £2,815 per annum, which seems fairly modest. And that's, I say, just for noting. Just move on to the next one, Chairman, if you're happy.
All right, yeah.
And the next one is the lease for Carlingford Lough Greenway, and it's proposed to be a 50-year lease on the basis of, again, a very modest rental of £2,750 per annum.
That's great. Thanks for that. There's no question. Sure. Oh, sorry, Councillor Allen, you're running there.
Chair, I think this is leasing the whole foreshore along the northern shore of Carlingford Lough. In my understanding, that all of the issues about right away along the seafront, particularly at Killoan and behind Cap Ballyedmin, have not been resolved. Now, realise that the lease is overdue for some time. It was overdue when we last met and discussed the problems that relate to. There's two areas at Ballyedmin, and I think that they need to be resolved. We need to know that people can walk along the foreshore from, say, the White Beach to Schoolhouse Lane and do it legally. And I think that that needs to be agreed and written into that contract. Now, maybe it has been. I haven't seen the contract, but that was the big issue back the last time that we discussed this. And I think that if that's not resolved, then and the Crown Estate is overriding what the council are trying to do, then serious questions must be asked about whether we actually lease it at all. Sorry.
Chairman, what has been agreed, we have met with the Crown Estates agent, is that we proceed with a renewal of the lease of the foreshore, and any adjustments required in relation to any of the outstanding matters will be dealt with separately, but our aim now is to get this long overdue lease in place.
Right.
If we
don't agree to this, will this hold up the project from the our own project, the Greenway?
Yes, Chair, what has happened historically is that a whole lot of issues were tied into one kind of, they were all deemed to be codependent on something else. What we're saying is what we need to do is get the head lease in place and then we'll deal with other issues as they arise. But certainly the view was that the agent for the Crown Estate felt that they couldn't move on the lease for Carlingford Lock Greenway until the matter of the lease of the entire foreshore was resolved.
Right, thank you. Councillor Anne
Wright. Presumably this has nothing to do with the previously existing leases on the foreshore in the Old Down Council, which make it so easy to manage beaches and whatnot, is it?
Please don't make this any more complicated. Chairman, the lease of foreshore for Legacy Down is in place for the next 15 years. Mm-hmm. At the moment, we are keeping the two foreshore leases separate. Mm-hmm. It would be my hope in the future, once we resolve the matter of the Legacy Newry foreshore lease, that we could move to one foreshore lease, a composite one for the whole district.
Okay, you have a quick point on this one.
Yeah, Chair, we're talking two different leases, really, are we not? The two different leases, and we're talking about the Greenway and we're talking about the foreshore in Carlingford Lock.
Yeah.
I have no problem with the Greenway going ahead,
right.
and certainly not to hold up that project.
Yeah.
I do have an issue. People are going to have to advise us very carefully from a legal point of view, but I do have an issue. If we sign the lease for the foreshore in Carlingford Lock, and a couple of issues have not been resolved, particularly in around Killoan and Ballyadmond, then we don't have any ammunition, for the want of a better term, when we come to deal with the Crown Estate. You've already signed the lease up and away from it. And I really think that there is a question of conscience. Should we be taking the lease, because with the lease comes responsibility, and should we be taking that responsibility if we cannot work along the foreshore at Ballyadmond?
All right, who's taking this? Ari, do you want to take that thought?
Chairman, the council has already agreed to renew the lease, and as I said, that any issue relating to any other matter will be dealt with separately.
Do you not need approval here at this committee for the lease? No?
No, Chair, this was approved by SPNR previously in August.
Alright. Alright, so. Alright.
Yeah, can we. Apologies, I was missing in August. Can we have that sort of checked out, that the council have agreed to go ahead with this lease? Presumably, if you're saying that it's fact, but
right.
I think that could be a mistake.
So the reading of it says agreed to finalise the new head regulating foreshore lease. It doesn't say we've agreed to enter into the lease.
Okay. This is for an open here. It's not for decision here. It's for an open.
I'm calling up the paper which came to SCNR in August. At that stage, was the recommendation was the council finalised the new head regulating forced release from Urie and Mourne with the Crown Estate Commissioners. There were then each of the points which the Crown Estate had talked to us about, including the Ballet Edmund, etc., were all laid out in detail in that paper, but this was the overriding. The recommendation was to finalise the new head regulating forced release for Urie and Mourne.
Well, how are you going to have a proposal in the second of that? Is
that the case? That was proposed in August by SCNR, ratified by council in September. The paper in front of you tonight is for noting to say that that instruction was then given to the Crown Estate, and so Alison's bringing the paper tonight to let you know that.
So it's done on the ratify.
That's the price now, yeah.
Right. Okay.
Chair, could I ask for an update on where we are with the two issues in around Ballyedmin, with the pathway, and I see it has gone to planning and right of way between the White Beach and Old Schoolhouse Lane.
Someone will come back to you on that, Councillor Chair. Yeah. All right. Right, item 13, you're taking the stream.
This is simply for noting tonight. This is we bring this report to you quarterly, which identifies all of the policies that we have screened in the period. So for the period July to September, 4 reports were screened. They're listed out for you. No EQIAs were considered necessary. I don't propose to go through them in detail. It's for noting.
All right. Item 14.
Similarly, for noting, councillors, you'll be aware that the Drumna Kelly landfill site in Seaford is no longer active as a waste accepting site. We are now required to make an application to the Northern Ireland Environment Agency for a variation permit, and the Environment Agency requires us to enter into a local authority deed showing that council has made and will maintain adequate financial provision to enter into the closing and the capping of that site. We've already entered into such a deed in respect of the Ochnagum site, and with regard to financial provision, that's something which both the Legacy and the current council have had in place for some time, something which receives great attention from the auditors each year. So really it's to note tonight that we are drawing up that deed in order to seek the variation permit from NIEA as required.
Councillor Bonner.
Sure. I know it says it's been budgeted for, but have we any idea of the actual cost or an in around figure of the cost? Or is it outlined in one of the directorates separately?
Just for the purposes of the table, 2,056,000. No, 2 million. No, just for the table, because you'll not be picked up. Thank you, Ken.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, Chairperson. In the audit committee, we did establish previously that should a renewable energy stream be made available from this particular site, we would be able to decrease the number of millions put aside for the purpose of decommissioning. I just want to make sure that policy is still in place.
Yes, Councillor, that's something that we look at each year. And however, the auditors have advised that until such times as there is a defined income stream, they don't want to see us reducing that provision. We're not quite there yet with Drumna Kelly and being able to get, a consistent a flow from that site as yet. So that's something that we look at periodically, and certainly, yes, we would be looking to reduce that once we're in a position to do so.
Item 15, it's the local government staff commission, Katrina, are you taking that?
Yes,
I can take that through. It's just for noting, Chairman. We've brought that to you before. Obviously, the staff commission is still in operational existence, and we're still required to pay a contribution to that. We have now received the invoice for the second payment, and so it's just for noting that we're required to go ahead and pay that.
You want in
the Yeah, just one quick question, Chair. Obviously, depending on the Northern Ireland Assembly's behaviour and outcome, if it is before the end of the 6 month period that we've just paid for, do we receive a refund if it is closed before the end of the 6 months, or is that money gone?
Certainly, once we made the first part of the annual payment, we wrote to the Department for Communities because there had been a discussion at this committee on the night about our unhappiness of perhaps having
to pay
back.
The right word there.
I am. And so the Department for Communities wrote back to note our concerns, but I suppose also to note that they were quite powerless to do anything about it themselves at the minute. So we certainly something that we raised through the finance working group directly with the department, and we'll continue to raise and see where we get to.
I'll take that as a yes.
No promises.
We'll not get back.
No promises.
We write a proposal to go into the committee.
Yes,
we
have.
Right, we want to propose, we're going into the closed session now, so we want to propose on a second or second to committee. All right. This item is deemed to be accepted from the paragraph 3.
Read the recommendations.
Aye. All right.
So just.
So, in relation to item 16, surveillance and monitoring of town centre CCTV, agreed on the proposal of Councillor Murnan, seconded by Councillor Ruan by a vote of 6-4, 2 against, and 3 abstentions. To note the contents of the report, approve the recommendations in paragraphs 2.2 and 2.3 and the decision listed in the first paragraph of the officer's report. Item 17, management accounts. Agreed to note the management accounts for the first 5 months of the 2017-18 financial year, the 5 months ending 31st of August 2017. Item 18, Muir Leisure Centre. Agreed on the proposal of Councillor Ruan, seconded by Councillor Murnan. To note the progress report on Newry Leisure Centre Phase 2 and approve the recommendations in Section 3.1 and 3.2 of the officer's report relating to expenditure on this project. Then on the strategic item 20, Strategic Projects Working Group, 22nd of August 2017, agreed on the proposal of Councillor Ruan, seconded by Councillor Dorn. To note the contents of the action sheet of Strategic Projects Working Group meeting of 22nd of August 2017 and approve the recommendations relating to removal of some matters from the action sheet. Also agreed on the proposal of Councillor Savage, seconded by Councillor Byrne, that at the meeting of Strategic Projects Working Group on 17th of October 2017, a full report on the Albert Basin Park project be presented in minute format and presented as a separate report to the SPR committee, and this to apply to any project if requested by members of the working group and taking account of the Council's obligations under Part 1 of Schedule 6 of the Local Government Act NI 2014. Also noted Chief Executive's clarification that all Council members are entitled to attend the working group and participate in the debate. Item 19, recruitment of the RTS Director. Agreed on the proposal of Councillor Savage, seconded by Councillor Carr, to note the verbal update presented by the Chief Executive in relation to the recruitment of the Director of Regulatory and Technical Services and approve the recommendations as outlined by the Chief Executive in his verbal report to committee, having taken account of the views put forward by the members, with a further report being presented to the SPR committee in December 2017.
Thanks for that. And that's all the recommendations, that's all the items
proposed
on the agenda. Proposed and seconded. All right. Thank you, Councillor.